This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. When it comes to the care and treatment of stroke, there is a phrase that you may have heard of, and that's time is brain. Now, what this means is that if treatment is given as soon as possible from the time a stroke occurs, it can make a significant difference in saving brain tissue. So joining me on the line today is Dr. Hilwani Kaharuddin, emergency physician from Ara Damansara Medical Center, to explain more about the diagnosis and treatment of an acute stroke in the emergency setting. How are you today, Dr. Hilwani?
Very good, thank you, Shaik.
Dr. Hilwani, there is little data on the prevalence of stroke in Malaysia, but we do know that it is common and it is a significant cause of mortality. So if I quote some average figures that I found from 2015 to 2017 of the causes of death, that shows that stroke kills approximately 6,000 people in Malaysia every year. Now, looking at your perspective as an emergency physician, how significant is the burden of stroke in your centre?
Okay, I would not like to talk about my center because I don't think it represents the whole of Malaysia. But if you look at Malaysian data, I think the CRC stands for Clinical Research Center in KL. They report 92 admissions for acute strokes per day into hospitals all across Malaysia. Okay, mm-hmm. So. And I'm sure that doesn't represent the true figure, because I'm sure there's a lot of smaller hospitals that do not report their data. Mm-hmm. But even if you take that ballpark figure of about 92 cases a day, and you times that with 365 days of a year, so we're talking about, 33,000 cases in a year, right, of stroke. We have to take into consideration that stroke is a chronic disease and it's quite a debilitating disease. So if you take into consideration the complications and the impact that it has, not just on the patient, but also on his family, on their families, their carers, as well as the healthcare system, and you're talking about loss of productivity, loss of income, and the impact that has on the economy. So I would say the burden is very significant. I can't put a number to it, but I would say there's a significant burden. All right.
Of course. And it is more than just the burden of, by looking at numbers, there's the qualitative impact on lives of the patients and the families, as you mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think we take a lot of things for granted. For example, when we're well, you know, you wake up this morning, you wake up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you know, you're not even thinking about that. While you're brushing your teeth, you're thinking, okay, I've got, you know, this meeting in the morning, you're thinking of your deadlines, and then at the end of the day, I'm going to do this and that, you know. You don't think of all the little processes. Mm-hmm. But when a stroke hits you, all those little things like putting the toothpaste onto your toothbrush and, you know, the actual action of brushing your teeth, you have to put so much more effort to do all those little things that we take for granted at the moment, you know. So it's definitely something significant.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps we could get a bit of a 101. If you could explain what are the different types of strokes and what is happening in the brain when a stroke occurs.
Okay. So you can divide strokes into two different types in general, just generalizing it to two different types. One is ischemic stroke, which accounts for the majority of the stroke. That's about 85% of all cases. Mm-hmm. And that's caused by a blood clot in the brain. Mm-hmm. Then the remaining 15% is hemorrhagic stroke, which is caused by bleeding into the brain, for example, a ruptured aneurysm. So those are the two sort of general types of stroke. What happens in a stroke? Basically, a stroke is a focal neurological deficit, or put it plainly, impairment in brain function due to disruption of blood supply to the brain. Because the brain controls everything that we do, the symptoms or manifestations of a stroke will vary from person to person, depending on which area of the brain that's affected. I think most of us, when we talk about stroke, we will immediately imagine somebody with unilateral weakness, one-sided paralysis, that kind of thing. And to be fair, the majority of strokes do present like that. Mm-hmm. But like I said, because the brain controls everything that we do, there are many other symptoms or manifestations of a stroke. Some people don't even have weakness. Okay.
Right.
Sometimes they just have sudden loss of vision or sudden slurring of speech. And in fact, there's one subset of hemorrhagic stroke called subarachnoid hemorrhage, where they present with just a really, really bad headache.
Right.
And you know, a headache is so common.
That's
right. So that's going to be difficult for people to determine whether is this a symptom of stroke or not. So a very easy way to remember possible symptoms of stroke would be to remember this acronym called BEFAST. B-E-F-A-S-T. Again, it's not exhaustive, but it gives you some idea of, you know, the different types of manifestations of stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So B stands for balance. So you can have a sudden loss of balance or incoordination, and that is, you know, you find yourself being clumsy when you're usually not. You know, you're dropping things when you're usually quite okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a symptom of stroke. E stands for eye symptoms, and that could be a sudden loss of vision or persistent double vision. And that could be a symptom of stroke. F stands for facial droop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a bit difficult because we don't usually look at ourselves in the mirror all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking to someone and you notice that one side of the face is drooping, or it's more obvious, I suppose, when they're smiling, and you see that the corners of the mouth are not turning up as they usually do when we smile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of facial muscle weakness.
Okay.
A stands for arm drift. So if you get them to hold their arm straight ahead of them and hold it there for about 30 seconds, and if one side of the arm starts to drift down, again because of weakness, that's also a symptom of stroke.
Great.
And S stands for speech. So they could have slurring of speech, that they're not pronouncing things as they usually do,
mm-hmm.
or even the inability of finding the right words to express themselves. So even that can be a symptom of stroke. So BEFAS, and T, the T in this is not a symptom of stroke, it's just time.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, time is brain. So if anybody is manifesting any of those signs, you have to remember that this could be a stroke, and therefore it's time to act. Either bring them yourself to the nearest hospital or call 999 for the ambulance to come.
All right. So, you know, what you've described, I guess just listening to it, perhaps just in this abstract form, it sounds like I would definitely be able to recognize it. I know that, you know, if I see it, this is a stroke. But in reality, how challenging or how easy is it to recognize that in yourself or in your family member, for instance?
It is very challenging because the symptoms can be very subtle. That's number one. And number two, we obviously nobody expects the worst to happen to them, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people come to hospital quite late. And when you ask them what happened, let's say you suddenly notice that your right arm is a bit weaker than usual. A lot of people rationalize the symptoms. They put it down to the fact that they did a bit of heavy lifting the day before, or they slept on their right arm kind of thing, you know. So they think that could be the reason. So a lot of people actually go out for massage first, or they try to sleep it off, and they think, you know, when I wake up, hopefully it feels better. And it's only when the symptoms do not improve or actually worsen a couple of hours later, that's when they start to seek treatment. And that is a big issue to us because the time is brain. As you say, the longer you wait, the more brain cells are damaged. And the treatment that we have for stroke is very much time dependent.
Mm. So what is the ideal window for you? How soon should someone seek treatment when they have an acute stroke?
As soon as possible. This is the easiest answer. As soon as possible, you know. In the last 15 years or so, we have come up with a new treatment. We found a new treatment for acute ischemic stroke, yeah? And that's intravenous thrombolysis.
Mm-hmm.
Thrombolysis just means, thrombus means blood clot, and lysis means dissolve. So you're just trying to dissolve that blood clot. But in order for this treatment to provide you any benefit, we need to administer it within 4.5 hours from the symptom onset.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why time is very important for us.
And in your experience, how many patients actually do come in within that optimal window of 4.5 hours?
Very few. I don't have a figure for you, but very few.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I said, this treatment, intravenous thrombolysis, is mainly for ischemic stroke. Unfortunately, what we find is most of the people who do come in early, it actually has hemorrhagic stroke, in which this treatment is not suitable for them.
Right.
I think because hemorrhagic stroke, the symptoms tend to be more pronounced. compared to an ischemic stroke, that you know, the symptoms come on a little bit more insidiously. So that's why they present to us a bit earlier. But again, I think as long as more people are aware of the symptoms of stroke, don't wait for it. Yes, there are other things that may be the reason behind your symptoms. You may be tired. You may be having a hypoglycemic episode. But whatever it is, it's a possibility. As long as you think there's a possibility that it is a stroke, you need to get yourself to hospital and get yourself checked out.
And don't go for a massage first. Go to your doctor first.
No.
But very quickly, Dr. Helwani, what are the potential complications if treatment or care is delayed and patients are coming in too late?
Okay. As I mentioned, a stroke is an impairment in the brain function due to disruption of blood supply, right? So our brain requires a lot of oxygen and nutrients to function, and that's delivered to it by our blood. So when there's a disruption of blood supply, the brain is then deprived of this, and the cells will start to die. And that happens very early, within minutes, within 5 minutes, in fact, that your brain cells start to die.
Right.
And our brain cells don't regenerate. So the longer you wait, the more area is affected, and therefore the worse the symptoms are. So the idea of this treatment with intravenous thrombolysis is, in the initial stages of stroke, you've got a small area that's affected, right? A small area in which the blood supply is compromised. And this area is surrounded by a bigger area of cells that are at risk, where the blood supply is reduced, but it's still getting some blood supply from other blood vessels. So it is at risk of dying. So what you want to do is you want to dissolve that clot now, not to regenerate the cells that are already dead, because that doesn't happen, but to save the other cells that are at risk from developing a stroke.
Right, okay. I'm speaking today to Dr. Helwani Kaharuddin, emergency physician from Ara Damansara Medical Center, and we are discussing the management of acute stroke. And we've already covered the importance of time, the importance of recognizing the early symptoms and signs of a stroke so that you can get to a hospital ASAP for the treatment that you need. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what this treatment, this thrombolysis that Dr. Helwani has been talking about, how you actually carry that out. What are the other treatment options, especially considering that hemorrhagic stroke does occur as well. We're going to cover a little bit of that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. I'm discussing the management of acute stroke today with Dr. Helwani Kaharuddin, emergency physician from Ara Damansara Medical Center. So there are two different types of strokes. There's ischemic stroke, that's when there's a blood clot in one of the vessels leading to the brain, and there's hemorrhagic stroke, and that's when there's bleeding in the brain. Ischemic stroke is by far the more common one, and really something that we all should remember and take note of this acronym BFAST, because these are the early warning signs and symptoms of an acute stroke, and the moment you recognize this in yourself or in someone around you, you need to call an ambulance or get to the hospital immediately. So that's B for balance, E for eye and vision problems, F for facial droop. That's when one side of your face appears paralyzed or weak. A for arm drift, S for speech, which can become slurred, or you may have problems finding the right words when you're trying to communicate. And T, of course, refers to time, and that's the essential part of all this, which is, can you get to the hospital as soon as possible? Because you start losing brain cells within 5 minutes of that stroke occurring, and you want to be able to save as much of the brain tissue as you can. Dr. Helwani, can you describe a little bit about what happens at the hospital when a patient with a stroke arrives? What are the steps that you would take?
Okay. So when somebody arrives to hospital with a possibility of a stroke, they will be sent to the priority treatment area. So you will not be waiting outside with the cough and cold and the fever and whatnot, because we're trying to rush for time, right, to meet that 4.5 hours of window period to initiate treatment if it's suitable. So you'll be pushed to the priority treatment area. You'll be seen by a doctor at that point. We will ask you some questions, get some history from you, do a clinical examination. So the history and physical examination is suggestive of a stroke, then we activate the stroke team. which consists of neurologists and radiographers and pharmacists. And then just so that everybody knows that there is a potential stroke case here, which may require intravenous thrombolysis. So all this is to make sure that everything is done quickly and we can administer the medication as soon as we can. Now, the next step would be for us to get a CT scan. And the CT scan is mainly to differentiate between a hemorrhagic and an ischemic stroke because the treatment is completely different. Early phases of an ischemic stroke, you will see no changes in the CT scan. So it's not so much to diagnose that this is an ischemic stroke, but just to make sure that it's not a hemorrhagic stroke. So as long as we do not see bleeding into the brain, then it is treated as an ischemic stroke because the signs and symptoms are there. At that point then, even though you are within the 4.5 hours of that window period to give the medication, that medicine is not necessarily suitable for everyone. We have to go through a checklist to make sure that it will benefit you. As with any treatment that we offer, there will be side effects or risks to it. So in the case of intravenous thrombolysis, there is a risk of bleeding. Because if you imagine the work is it dissolves blood clots, right? So it can also cause bleeding. And this bleeding could be anywhere into the brain or into the tummy, that kind of thing. So on studies that have been performed, there are a few criteria that we find in which if you fulfill this criteria, the risk of bleeding is therefore higher in those cases, and therefore we will not offer thrombolysis for those cases. So when you come in, we do a quick physical examination history to see whether this is a stroke or not. We think it is, then we activate the stroke team, we get a CT scan. Even for the CT scan, there is an aim. You need to get the CT scan done and interpreted within 30 minutes because, we're rushing to meet that window period of 4.5 hours.
All right. And this intravenous thrombolysis, how exactly do you deliver this treatment? And if it's done, let's say in a very ideal situation, it is done within 4.5 hours of a stroke occurring, how effective is it in resuming blood flow to the brain?
Okay. So intravenous thrombolysis is just like any other intravenous medication. We put in an IV line into you and then it's given intravenously. Mm-hmm. So it's given in two parts, shall I say. So the dosage, we give us an intravenous bolus, meaning a quick injection into the vein, and then it's followed by a 1 hour infusion. So during that 1 hour infusion, you'll be monitored very, very closely for signs and symptoms of bleeding, like I said, because it can cause bleeding. So this treatment is usually carried out in a stroke ICU. And during the infusion of 1 hour, every 15 minutes, we will check your blood pressure, we'll do a targeted physical examination to look for signs and symptoms to suggest that this person may develop complications of bleeding. Upon completion of treatment, that will be about 1 hour.
So if intravenous thrombolysis can be carried out within that ideal window of 4.5 hours, how effective is it in resuming blood flow to the brain?
Right. So intravenous thrombolysis has been shown to increase the chances of minimal to no disability by 30%. And that's significant. If you think about standard treatment means just aspirin and rehabilitation, which is what we've been doing all this while before the invention of this intravenous thrombolysis. Now, with standard treatment, 65% of people do not recover functional use of the factor arm, meaning if you've had a stroke and it caused weakness in your right arm, let's say, in your right hand dominant, you're usually right-handed, 60% of people do not recover functional use of the arm. And when we talk about ability to walk and mobilize, 25% of people with just standard treatment of stroke are unable to walk without full assistance. So 30% higher chance of minimal or no disability with intravenous thrombolysis is a huge improvement. But again, we have to be careful and choose the right patients in which to administer this because the risk of bleeding is there. With the right criteria fulfilled, with the right patient selection, that risk is very low.
And what do you do for patients who have that increased risk of bleeding? What are their options?
Right. So we may need to do further tests, for example, a CT angiogram. There is another option called mechanical thrombectomy for patients who are not eligible for this intravenous thrombolysis. Mechanical thrombectomy is basically putting a wire into the blood vessel, similar to a coronary angiogram. But instead of pushing the wire into the heart, we guide the wire to the blood vessels in the brain instead. And we find the blood clot and we bust it and you suck it up. Okay, right. That's putting it crudely. But again, these are special skills. I mean, I don't do that, but that's how it generally is how it's done. Okay, but again, this is not suitable for all patients. Those who have a blood clot in the bigger vessels of the brain, and that's not suitable for thrombolysis, meaning maybe you've gone beyond the 4.5 hours, because for mechanical thrombectomy, you can go ahead with it up to 8 hours from symptom onset.
Right.
As long as the blood clot is affecting a bigger blood vessel in the brain, smaller blood vessels we're not able to get into, and the risk of bleeding from that is a lot higher, so we don't go anywhere near that. So, but if the patient has symptoms that is beyond 4.5 hours, we will proceed with another CT scan that's called CT angiogram to see where the blood clot is. And if the blood clot is big enough, in a big enough vessel, then an option would be to do this mechanical thrombectomy. And again, it is more specialized, so only certain centers provide this service.
And you mentioned that a CT scan earlier during the diagnostic period is very important to distinguish between an ischemic stroke and a hemorrhagic stroke. So what is the treatment for a hemorrhagic stroke then?
Okay. Basically, what happens in a hemorrhagic stroke is you have bleeding into the brain. Not only does that disrupt the blood supply to the brain because the blood vessels have burst, the bleeding into the brain also causes increased pressure in the brain and swelling in the brain, which will further reduce blood supply to the brain cells, right? So treatment for hemorrhagic stroke depends on the severity of the bleeding. If it's small and the patient is clinically okay, we may just observe and control the blood pressure to reduce the bleeding, to slow it down a bit. But if the bleeding is very big, that we see the brain has started to swell and the patient's conscious level is dropping, then we may need to decompress the brain by removing the blood clot. There is a small subset of hemorrhagic stroke, which I mentioned earlier, the subarachnoid hemorrhage. That is slightly different in the sense that it is usually due to a ruptured aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
So for subarachnoid hemorrhages, in general, the treatment would be to look for the source of bleeding, find the aneurysm, and either clip it or coil it. Basically, you plug the puncture.
The puncture, that would be
correct.
The source of the bleeding,
meaning
right?
Meaning the ruptured, the ruptured blood vessel, yes.
Right, of course. So what happens after this point if you are able to institute the right treatment? How long are they in your care for, and what happens after this?
Okay, so we've spoken about the initial treatment, how to stop the bleeding or how to restore blood supply to the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the next step would be rehabilitation. And ideally, rehabilitation starts as soon as possible. Usually, if it's a ischemic stroke, we would like to start rehabilitation, say, within the next 24 to 48 hours. Probably the first day, we focus more to look for complications of intravenous thrombolytics, looking for bleeding and that kind of thing. But then we would want to start rehabilitation as soon as possible. And rehabilitation would mean motor function, speech, even swallow. And we used to think that rehab, would only last for a few months. But more and more so now, we find that the longer you undergo rehab, the more good you will gain from it. Obviously, after a certain time, the improvement may not be so substantial, may not be very obvious, but the improvement does not stop. So I think that's one of the things I would like to stress to people out there. You don't stop rehab at 2 months or 6 months. Rehab is an ongoing thing, and you will see yourself improving with time.
All right. I want to quickly touch on, because the main risk factors for stroke are things like hypertension, all the things that come with it, diabetes, high blood cholesterol, all these metabolic issues. But that would also mean that these patients typically have other coexisting conditions. So how do you manage when a patient has these other comorbidities as well?
Right. So if you look at it, the risk factors for stroke is the same risk factors for ischemic heart disease, which is the number one killer in Malaysia. The top four causes of death in Malaysia for the last 5-6 years has not changed. Top on the list is ischemic heart disease. That's followed by lower respiratory tract infection or pneumonia. And the third and fourth is, you know, there's sometimes it's sepsis or sometimes it's stroke. So it's the same. And the risk factors, like I said, for stroke and for ischemic heart disease is the same. As you said, hypertension is top on the list. Diabetes is there. Cigarette smoking is there. Obesity is there. So and the scary part is this, that one in every third Malaysian has high blood pressure. Mm. And we don't even know it because it's a silent disease. So what you need to do is for stroke, you settle the initial part, you give treatment for the initial part, and then you go for rehabilitation. But on top of that, you need to modify their risk factors to prevent them from getting a second stroke, meaning blood pressure control is very, very important. Starting medications as well as proper diet counseling to control your blood cholesterol is very, very important. You know, getting them to stop smoking is extremely, extremely important. I know a lot of people have difficulty to quit smoking because it is an addiction, mm-hmm. Whether they realize it or not. But there are programs now that are created to help you to quit smoking. So we need to identify what risk factors this person has for a stroke and manage that one by one. It may be pharmacological by medications. It could be counseling. It could be lifestyle changes.
And you mentioned whatever treatment takes place in the stroke ICU. Ideally, how long do you want patients to be in the stroke ICU? I mean, I'm sure the idea is to move them out and into, like you said, rehab as soon as possible, right?
Yes. So really, we don't need to keep somebody in stroke ICU for very long, maybe 24 to 48 hours only, mm-hmm. Just within the treatment of the intravenous thrombolysis or even post-op for a hemorrhagic stroke. Once they're okay, we remove them to a normal ward. In some hospitals that are dedicated themselves to stroke service, they have a stroke unit. And the stroke ICU is one part of it, but you have another ward where you have multidisciplinary people, doctors, physiotherapists, nurses, as well as dietitians that are specially trained to care for stroke patients. And it has been shown that if you start with a stroke unit, the care is a lot better, that there is a reduction in mortality, as well as there's a reduction in length of hospital stay as well. So it's good that you have specially trained people to look after you.
And for you, what have been some of the challenges in instituting emergency care for an acute stroke?
For me, mainly, I would say getting the patients in within that 4.5 hours. Mm-hmm. I think we've already talked about that. So I hope that if anything at all, people will remember the symptoms that we spoke about, the acronym BEFAST, B-E-F-A-S-T. Okay. If you have any of that, please come to hospital straight away. Mm-hmm. And do not trivialize these things because it's something that is potentially treatable. And if not, it causes quite devastating disability. So you really want to get yourself to hospital as soon as you can. Another setback I would say is that unfortunately in Malaysia, and I think Malaysia is not the only one, is that we do not have enough centres that offer these services. I don't think intravenous thrombolysis is offered in district hospitals, for example, you know. Mm-hmm. So the access is not there for some people. Mm-hmm. And again, because the expertise is not there, that some small hospitals do not even have a CT scan. Mm-hmm. So that also contributes to the delay in patients getting into the right hospitals. And therefore, that limits us to what we can offer the patient.
Would it be advisable at all for somebody to go to a GP clinic if they suspect a stroke?
With, not meaning to have any offence to the GPs, but no, please go to the nearest hospital. But if you don't know where the nearest hospital is, you end up going to the clinic, a GP. They do have a role as well. What they do is they will call up the nearest hospital and inform us that, you know, they're sending this patient, which is a possible stroke. Mm-hmm. What that does is that we at the hospitals were able to get ourselves ready. And again, like I said, activate the stroke team so that when the patient does arrive to our door, everything is in place and we can cut down on the time from there.
Yeah.
You know, at least that communication is there and we're ready for the patient. But as much as you can, if you think it is a stroke, please go to the nearest hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I was trying to find out also is, you know, this is not something you want to try and play a guessing game with. It's always safer to escalate it straight away to the emergency department.
Right.
So we've talked about, you know, what we can recognize in another person, right? And it's easier for somebody to see it in someone else. But what if I'm alone and I have some signs that I'm not sure, maybe, what should I do?
If you're not sure, call 999. Our emergency call center is very good. Based on your symptoms, they will ask you a few questions and help guide you to see whether this could be a stroke or it's something else. Most of the time, we will err on the side of being safe, and therefore we'll say it's a stroke. But you're right in the sense that there may be some people, for example, people with diabetes, who may be having a hypoglycemic episode, and which you know would present similar to the symptoms of stroke. So they would guide you to say, you know, if you're a diabetic, you need to check your blood sugar and stuff like that. So if you're not sure what to do, call 999. And they will ask you a few questions and they'll walk you through that. And on top of that, if needed, they will send in an ambulance to pick you up. Have I said that enough times already?
I think it's worth saying one more time. Get to the hospital.
Get yourself to the nearest hospital.
That's right. Well, I suppose perhaps that will be your final message, Dr. Hirwani. Do you have a final takeaway for us today?
Aside from remembering the signs and symptoms of stroke and getting to hospital as fast as you can, I would also like to take this opportunity, as we had already discussed, a lot of the risk factors for stroke, as well as ischemic heart disease, are what we call modifiable risk factors. Yes, hypertension plays a big role, but like I said, people don't even know, half of the people who have high blood pressure don't even know they've got high blood pressure. So what I'd like to say is look after yourself, lead a healthy lifestyle, eat healthy, exercise when you can, and do go for regular medical checkups, because you will not know if you've got high blood pressure unless you check for it. You will not know you've got diabetes unless you check for it, you know. And these are silent diseases, and you've had that for a long time. The complications start to develop, and usually the symptoms only develop at the very, very end once you've got organ damage, and we really don't want that. So look after yourself, look after your family, and give us a call anytime you need it.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Hirwani Kaharuddin, emergency physician from Ara Damansara Medical Center, about managing an acute stroke. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.